Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it's Mr. Encore. Fantasy sports and politics crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy sports and politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on. Peace.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, hello, hello. Once again, we're back here like we always do on a Thursday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am JT, a.k.a. The Master, and I'm, as always, I'm joined by my esteemed co-host, Jeff the Joker. Two Jersey guys, Jay and Jay, and we make up two-thirds of the FSP crew show. We've got a great show in store for you tonight. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is the place to be if you want to talk to Jeff or me. Got a chat room open. It's for your convenience. Lay your knowledge in that chat room. Make a comment, statement, whatever you like in that chat room. Whatever you put into that chat room, you're going to get out of it. So come right or don't come at all. Like I said, we got a great show to start for you tonight. NFL news is buzzing. Free agency is right around the corner. We got Tiger Woods. We got legends. This has been one hell of a week. Legends passing away. And college basketball and the NFL trailblazers, guys that are absolutely icons from their respective sport, passing away. We're going to talk about that. But before we do that, let's bring in my esteemed co-host, like I told you before, Jeff the Joker. Welcome, my man. How you doing?
Hey, Jeremy. All right. How about you?
Well, Jeff, I don't know where to start, man. I mean, we talked just before we came on air. There's a lot of things going on this week. This is week has been like, I don't know, man. In the last 2 weeks, there's been some legends passed away. Last week, I don't know if you know it or not, the first black golfer, George Sifford, died in his last week, and this week, this is like an unbelievable week. And I know if I leave someone out that we're talking about, please don't be afraid to jump in there and let me know. The first one I want to talk about that we're going to pay condolences to his family, and a trailblazer on and off the court. I'm talking about the guy from Chapel Hill, longtime basketball coaching legend from the University of North Carolina, the one that Michael Jordan considers him his second father. I'm talking about Dean Smith. He passed away about a week ago, almost a week ago, February 7th, at the ripe old age of 83. After a relatively long illness, and he's left by his six kids, Christian, Kelly, Scott, Sandy, Sharon Smith. That's six kids, yes. And his wife passed away. Looks like she may have passed away. Two of them. We didn't even realize he was married twice. But one passed away in 73, and another one passed away. Had to be maybe early part of this year, because from what I'm seeing in his bio, his present wife, Lene, passed away in 2015. I'm not exactly sure when, though. And almost – 84 he would have been 84 at the end of February. And he was a February child, born in 1931 in Kansas, and he passed away. And like I said, Jeff, he was a trailblazer. He recruited and signed the first black basketball player at the University of North Carolina. And years before that, he, from what I didn't even know this, and I don't know if you knew this, that he went downtown in Chapel Hill, if I'm not mistaken, and him and along with a couple of his black friends, went to a restaurant, which at that time it was an all-white restaurant. Black people weren't served. Walked in, and because of, I guess, the cloud he had, made the people who don't normally serve black people at that time serve them. So, and the fact is he, and I didn't know this, I thought he was a relatively conservative person, but he wasn't. He was pretty a progressive person and always looked to be inclusive and rather than exclusive, if you know what I mean. I have to give it to the man. I didn't exactly know all about Dean Smith, unfortunately, until he passed away, when things that were unknown to me and probably a lot of other people came out. He was one hell of a person, even better person off the court than he was on the court, and he was legendary on the court. What's your thoughts?
You know, I'm a little ashamed I didn't know more about, you know, the kind of man that Dean Smith was. I mean, and that's one of the great things about him was he didn't try to draw attention to himself.
Right.
I was just talking about this with somebody. I think some people really deify, you know, these big-time college basketball or football coaches. But the term gets overused. But Smith was the real deal, you know. He wasn't the guy who screws a player out of a scholarship if he gets hurt. He really cared about his players, not just the stars. I assume he could have left North Carolina for a lot of money if that's what he wanted, which I'm sure he was getting well paid, but he probably had opportunities. He also was successful coaching internationally. He coached at least one Olympic team. And especially when you're in that position, if you're full of it, you'll get exposed eventually because, you know, especially in something like college sports, you know, he was at, Chapel Hill. They got bitter rivals like NC State and Duke. And if he got busted for jaywalking, it would have been all over the place. And, he kept a low profile. Charlie Scott was, the player, I think he was from New York, and he brought Charlie Scott to play at UNC and didn't try to get any pats on the back for it. And because I think the SEC integrated before the ACC did. And now it's almost like something you take for granted. And I know he just passed away. Even before he passed away, I don't think any of his former players or coaches had anything bad to say about him. And sure, you know, he had the Michael Jordans and the James Worthies and Bill Ford, who was a big name back in the 70s and so on, guys like that. But, you know, a lot of his players went on to be successful in things besides basketball. They didn't, you know, not all of his guys played in the pros. And I'll tell you, they could, some people didn't like the kind of offense he was running in the 70s, but hey, he won with it, you know. But, you know, I think that was one of the reasons they instituted the shot clock, and they can maybe use someone like him now to try to figure out ways to, you know, kind of put a little energy into the college game. And you know what? I mean, they kept calling him former UNC basketball coach. No, he's retired. I'm fairly certain. Because to me, there's a difference, you know. And I'll tell you, you know, it's once the expectation levels are high, there's a lot of pressure to win year after year, and I think that's when some guys maybe will tolerate some shady. Oh, another thing, he had a very high graduation rate.
96.6%.
Yeah, that's very good. I mean, I think that's higher than the rates for non-athletes. I mean, that's very impressive.
That's unbelievable. I'm reading his bio now, and that stands out that he had over a 96% graduation rate, and that goes into your point about how these guys, whether they play basketball or not, were able to succeed once they finished their college career. So that's a good point that you brought up. And his winning percentage in college, men's college basketball, was 77.6%, which was the ninth highest winning percentage of any men's college basketball coach. He won two national championships and appeared in 11 Final Fours, and had, at the time, he had the most at the time when he retired, which is a 97. Quite naturally, that's been broken with Mike Krzyzewski at being one at over 1,000 now, with 879 victories. But at the time he retired, that was a record. And believe it or not, and it's amazing, Jeff, that this guy, and they don't do this anymore, 36 years coaching at the University of North Carolina. 36 years. And you can't say that he's won every year, because he only been to 11 Final Fours out of 36 years. And I'm not discounting those Final Fours and two national championships, but he coached at UNC for 36 years. So I imagine at one point or another, maybe quite a few times, that he had down years, and he still kept them, unlike what they do now when a team or coach has his team not win as consistently as present-day presidents of schools and athletic directors of schools want them to, and they push that coach out and get a new coach in. Because everyone right now wants instant success. They want instant winning without giving a coach, for the most part, the chance to build a program, no matter what state it's in, the way he wants it. So what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it speaks well of who's making the decisions at UNC, that he – I don't think his job was ever in jeopardy. And, you know, this came out recently talking about Krzyzewski. I can never – Coach K. Nobody ever says his full last name. That he had a couple down years at Duke, but they were wise enough to stick with him. And speaking – and this is a little more positive, Gino Auriemma just got his 900th win. He's, you know, a great coach with the women, but still a very successful coach. And he's been up there in Connecticut for a long time. And, it's just been a tough week. Ed Sable from NFL Films passed away.
We're going to get to that. College basketball. We had Dean Smith, and I think that the next day or a couple days after that, we had one guy that I'm trying to think what they call Las Vegas, but Tao Chu.
Running Rebels.
The Tark the Shark, who put the run in Running Rebels, taking into four Final Fours and winning a national championship in 1990 with one of the most dominant college teams ever. And I used to watch these guys. You see, those guys, when Tark had them with Larry Johnson and Greg Anthony, and I'm trying to think who else was on that team. That was one hell of a defensive team, and they could do it on both ends of the court. Let me put it that way. They could score, and they could damn sure play some serious defense, and nobody wanted to play him. UCLA and the teams out west definitely didn't want to play him because they were too much of a stiff competition, and Tark was a hell of a coach, and some of the people, including the NCAA, tried to run him out of college basketball. And he wound up beating the NCAA, collecting a $2.5 million settlement after suing the NCAA for trying to run him out of basketball. And he was bitter to the end about the way the NCAA treated him while coaching, and carried the grudge the rest of his life. Now, I didn't know that. He was an innovator. He preached defense. He liked to watch his teams run, and the run they did. And they scored more than 100 points in 1976 and 77 in 23 games in an era before both the shot clock and the three-point shot. Wow. That's a hell of a thing to do, especially when you don't have a three-point shot at the time when they were putting up 100 points. That's a lot of running and a lot of offense when a time when a lot of teams were trying to slow things down. And I wouldn't say run the Princeton type of offense at the time, but they weren't scoring in triple digits that often. And if you ran up against the Running Rebels, you had to deal with that tenacious defense and the hellified offense that they ran on the other end of the court, because they ran you right into the ground. Your thoughts on Jerry Tarkanian, Tark the Shark?
Well,
sometimes he didn't like him that much, but he got the job done. Talk to me.
You know, Tark's legacy is a little more complicated than Dean Smith's, but as an adult, I learned to understand Tark a little more, and I can't blame him for being ticked off indefinitely to NCAA because of his lengthy war with the NCAA. The media made him out to be a big-time sleaze, and you know what? He was just sticking up for himself, just advocating for himself, and that's what I would have done in the same situation. A punk is going to say, you heard it through the grapevine, I did something wrong, okay, I'll just take my suspension and whatever. No, what kind of person would go along with that? Because his issue, he had legitimate issues with the NCAA. Basically, they wanted to put the school on probation, and I assume probably would have cost him his job, with no real proof for wrongdoing. You know, hearsay and conjecture. Oh, they heard from somebody who heard from somebody. And they're going to shut down a program with that nonsense? I mean, it's not a court of law, but they act like they're a court of law, but they don't have the power of subpoena. And the NCAA makes money hand over fist, but when it comes to conducting an investigation, they're very stingy. They don't conduct good investigations. And also, if they got an axe to grind, they're going to come down hard on people. More recently, it happened in USC. They came down hard on USC, not necessarily for violating the rules, for violating the NCAA because they didn't think they were cooperative enough. And, you know, that battle went on for years, and it really, I think, affected the way he was portrayed in the media, which affects the way he was, you know, fans thought of him. And people didn't realize he was an excellent coach. Even before he had those incredible teams in the late 80s, early 90s, he was sending a lot of guys to the NBA because, you know, he was playing more of an NBA style and was getting guys ready to play in the NBA. And I'm trying to think. I know Ricky Sobers was a guy back in the 80s from UNLV, but he sent plenty of guys before Larry Johnson to the NBA. And they were, I think one of the reasons why was because they were playing more of a pro style, and he was the kind of coach who was willing to give, you know, kids a chance if a kid had academic problems, if he had past legal problems. And a lot of those guys did very well, and they speak well of him. And he was close with his players. But, you know, the media made it sound like he was just some shady recruiter, and he just rolls out the basketballs, and they win. And that wasn't the case, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tark Kenny, I used to watch these guys, man. I used to love watching them because of the way they play the ball. And I think a lot had to do, Jeff, with the NCAA because of the way the team was. They were very flamboyant, up in your face, and that turned off a lot of people in the media and also quite naturally in the NCAA. And I think that's one of the reasons why they were trying any way they could, even if it wasn't ethical, to try to get Tarkania and bring that Running Rebel team, bring the University of Las Vegas, UNLV, basketball team down. So they didn't have that as the – because they were so dominant, they were basically the face of NCAA men's basketball. And quite naturally, that they didn't weren't the ideal picture of what they wanted to have as the face of the NCAA men's basketball. So they, in my opinion, tried to bring him down in unscrupulous ways and got the best of him with the $2.5 million settlement that they had to fork out because of what they tried to do to him and to the Running Rebels. It serves them right. And it's ironic about the NCAA that was years ago, decades ago. And the simple fact is they're still trying to do the same things, even though they're getting exposed more now than they got back in the day when they were trying to do that to Tarkanian. They're still trying to do those same things and run roughshod over and wield their power because they're the in quotation marks, the NCAA, and they're getting called on a carpet for it, and they're getting exposed as outright bullies that really are have an agenda that doesn't agree with the mainstream America. So God bless them. God bless those two guys. But this guy here, man, I'm a hell of a fan of football. That's my main sport. I have to say I live and breathe football. I watch football all the time, whether it's in season or out. I'm always either on the net or NFL Network. Thank God for NFL Network because I watch it religiously. This guy was an innovator. Born in AC New Jersey, back in the 1960, raised in South Jersey, went to Ohio State University. He was a member of the 19. He was selected to go. I didn't know this. He was selected for the 1936 Olympic team in the swimming team because he had a career at Ohio State as a swimmer. He set a world interscholastic swimming record in the 100-yard freestyle. And the reason he didn't go to the 1936 Olympic Games because he refused to participate because of the game's connections to Nazi Germany. He acted a little bit. He appeared on Broadway. He served in World War II and worked as a clothing salesman out of his father-in-law's factory. I think when they had a football life, they chronicled this. He founded. He loved to make films. In football life, he always was filming his family. His sons, his wife, and his daughter. He founded Blair Motion Pictures. I got to believe Blair Motion Pictures came from where he was raised, which is in Blairstown, New Jersey.
It was actually his daughter. It was named after his daughter.
Oh, okay. Thank you. It's just a coincidence that he was raised in Blairstown, too, but okay. His first major contract, and this is, you know, I don't remember the story how he got this, but it was his first major contract was to film the 1962 national championship between the New York Giants and the Green Bay Packers at Yankee Stadium in 1964, Blair Pictures became NFL Films with an exclusive deal to preserve NFL games on film. And it has been said his son, Steve Sable, of NFL Films, the only other human endeavor more thoroughly captured on a 16-millimeter film than the National Football League, is World War II. In 1995, he officially retired from NFL Films in his role as president and chairman. He was elected on February 5th, was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. He died in February 9th, 2 days after Dean Smith. I'm telling you, man, this is the week of notable sports celebrities in one way or the other that passed away. He died on February 9th at his home in Arizona, a few years after his son passed away at the age 69. Ed Sable was 98, ripe old age of 98, passed away, and he'll be forever remembered as the father of NFL Films and capturing the essence of the NFL and bringing it, basically, in my opinion, bringing it to the public, to the national, to the world, I should say, and making what the National Football League is today. Your thoughts on Ed Sable, pioneer and innovator?
I'm also a big fan. I mean, I practically grew up on NFL Films, and I think NFL Films is one of the reasons why NFL became so popular, because the other sports didn't have that. And, Ed and Steve Sable, I mean, they were filmmakers. I mean, it was top quality. I mean, they only shot on film. They didn't shoot on video. They would have saved a fortune if they shot on video, but they were all about quality. He got it. He got filmmaking. He got football. He got how important the narration was and how important the music was. He got it, and he put it together, and they won a lot of awards. And some of the stuff he did, they did so much, you forget about. They did Football Follies, which practically created the genre of blooper shows,
right?
And then that was so popular they had to have Son of Follies and so on, and just unreal. And they had those South Jersey connections, because when I was a kid, John Facenda was the voice of NFL Films, and people used to call him the voice of God, and he was he did the news on one of the Philadelphia channels, local TV. And then after John Facenda passed away, then they brought in Harry Callis, who did the Phillies games. Sadly, Steve Sable passed away a couple of years ago from a cancer. I could watch NFL Films all day. It's just top notch. It's not, I was trying to explain this to somebody, it's not just highlights or highlights with music. It's just, it's high quality. It really is. And it tells the story. It really does. And, he aspired to be more than that, and they achieved it. Very high quality, very well respected.
Yeah, and, John Facenda, man, you're right. He was had one hell of a voice well remembered. It's the Oakland Raiders in the Autumn Wind. That is one for the books. That is one for the books. And I always like listening to that. And it's one thing I enjoy. I don't know if you heard that or not.
Yeah, I hear you. You all right?
Did you hear that?
Yeah, I heard you. You all right?
Oh yeah. Did you hear John Facenda there?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know if you did or not. Let me play this because I really like listening to this, getting these guys together. Was absolutely amazing, and he was long of the voice of the NFL, and it was a pleasure to listen to him. And let's just listen to this. Yeah. Wow. I wish I had a voice like that, Jeff. I really do. That's one hell of a voice. Wow. And I'm not joking. Every time I hear that, it brings chills up on the back of my neck. It's like this guy and his voice, and it's just like that is a perfect voice for that Autumn Wind. And wow. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to change a little few gears here and talk about a guy that was a legend in his own time, and for some reason, that's gone astray. We're going to take a little short break here and then come right back.
Victor Gardner began the Fantasy Sports and Politics brand with the idea of combining two of his passions into a radio show. He then learned that politics were 95% of sports. When you tune into the Fantasy Sports and Politics show every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern, Mr. FST himself, Vic Gardner, and Jerry the Master Taylor will go over the weekend sports, prep you for your upcoming fantasy games, and spark a debate politicians would love to hear. That's the FSP show every Saturday at 1 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK. You can listen at spotonradio.web.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365 for other informative programs as well. Information, motivation, variety.
All right.
Looking for fantasy sports advice? How about informative conversation? Look no further, as the Master Plan features two men that can help in both areas. Jerry the Master Taylor and Lance the NFL Exporter Goodman provide you with a fantasy fix live every Sunday morning on the Master Plan at blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. You can listen at spotonradio.webs.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365, and listen to other informative programs as well. That's the Master Plan, Sundays 10 a.m. Eastern on blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK and streaming at spotonradio.webs.com. Information, motivation, variety, the Master Plan.
It's about 24 minutes before the end of the show. It's 8:36 right now. We're going to move on. One that we talked about, guys that passed away, Dean Smith, Ed Sable, Jerry Tarkanian. Now we're going to talk about one that's still on this earth, very young man, 12 years my junior. He's 48 years old, a former Knick, former 13-year NBA veteran, was on some storied Knick teams who went to the NBA Finals in 1994, won the NBA Sixth Man Award in 1994-95 season while being coached by Pat Riley. He played very ruggedly, could guard all five positions, and that's not too easy to do. I'm talking about none other than one of the enforcers and muscle guys and a very good player, and made himself out to be a very good player because he did play in the CBA and USBL in addition to his years in the NBA. 6'7", five seasons with the Knicks. Talking about none other than Anthony Mason, who at this point right now sent our thoughts and prayers to his family because Anthony Mason at the age of 48 is fighting for his life with he suffered a heart attack a few days ago, has since had multiple surgeries. He's got a serious heart ailment, which I believe is congestive heart failure. And like I said, he's fighting for his life. Your thoughts, Jeff?
Yeah, I was really sad when I heard that. The Knicks fans loved Mason. He also played in Turkey. I mean, he really paid his dues. And that was, you know, he was from, I think, Queens. He's from New York, and that was one of the reasons the fans liked him. And, you know, he was, he hustled. He was tough. That's what I like about Knicks fans. They don't just like the guys who score a lot. They like the guys who hustle and play D. And, he was playing in the same front court usually with guys like Ewing and Charles Oakley and Charles Smith and, and Mason, he did, he had a good run in Miami. He actually, I think, went to the All-Star game one year when he was playing in Miami. But, most people remember him most as a Knick.
Absolutely.
And the fan, the fans loved him. And I think when they were, when they were doing well during those years, I think it said a lot about that team that he and John Starks both were from the CBA. These weren't, high draft pick guys. These were guys who worked hard to make it in the NBA. And Starks was absolutely loved by Knicks fans, an all-time favorite. You don't hear as much about basketball players having health problems after retirement, as you do with football. But I guess it could happen. I don't think this has anything to do with his basketball. But, believe me, I had a cousin who died from a heart attack at 32. I don't know if he was sick before. It's very unfortunate. And he was an interesting guy. A few years ago, I heard he was very close friends with Jay Fiedler and his family, because Fiedler's dad had coached Mason, and they became very, very close.
Was that right?
That was pretty cool. It just was one of these things out of the blue. It came up when Fiedler was playing for the Dolphins, and people were curious that these two big name athletes were friends and the connection, and Mason had stayed very close with the Fiedler family. And Mason's got a couple sons. I think one of them's playing in college now, and it doesn't sound good based on what I heard about Mason, but you never know. Hopefully, I don't want to say miracle, but maybe something surprising and positive could happen, hopefully.
Yeah, it doesn't look good. I had a friend a year ago pass away from congestive heart failure, and he was a little past 50. I think he was like 52, 51, something like that. So that's tough. And most of the time, you don't recover from that. That is not a good thing to have, I hate to say it like this, but it's a death sentence, basically, to me. All right, and like I said, thoughts and prayers go out to Anthony Mason and his family and family and friends. I always liked watching him. He was the workman, guy that did all the dirty work along with Charles Oakley. So, God bless him. Let me put it that way. All right, let's move on to another guy that he's not in the same state, but there's something going on with one of the world's best golfers. And I'll run this real quick and then we'll come back. And let me run this one other thing, too, that about Tiger Woods. Jeff, Tiger Woods, he's got serious problems. He shot a career-worst 82, missed a cut in Phoenix Open by 12 shots, withdrew after 11 holes because of tightness in his back, says, right now I need a lot of work on my game and to still spend time with the people that are important to me. My play and scores are not acceptable for tournament golf. Like I've said, I entered a tournament to compete at the highest level, and when I think I'm ready, I'll be back. Jeff, Tiger Woods, is he done?
You know, it seems like it. He's a controversial figure. When I was a kid, everybody loved Arnold Palmer. And at that point, I can't believe we used to watch golf once in a while. Usually there was that spot between after football was over and before baseball started, you had a little bit of a gap. And even after he wasn't a top player, fans absolutely loved Palmer. And Tiger is a very different personality than Palmer. And Tiger is one of these guys, at this point he should be set for life. You meet the same people on the way down as you do on the way up. And he's rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. And you could say Tiger Woods was the Mike Tyson of golf because this is the 25th anniversary of Tyson getting upset by Buster Douglas. And, Tiger can't intimidate anymore. And the thing is, though, you say what you want about him, but when he was playing well, his excellence really did so much for attendance and ratings. I'm not a big golf fan, but he was, the face of the sport, whatever, good or bad. But this is a criticism of him, and he's a front runner. It wasn't a problem when he was always ahead. But now it seems, when he's playing lousy, back hurts or his butt hurts or whatever, he's very quick to drop out. And I'm not sure how golf people feel about that because I think there's a lot of protocol and whatever. I don't know if in golf if you're supposed to suck it up and finish whether you're hurt or not. But it seems like he does that a lot. And who knows? You don't know. He might not come back, or he could come back and have mixed success. He's a different kind of guy. He really is. And a lot of the traditional golf people don't like him for, some legitimate reasons and some reasons that aren't legitimate. But he did get a lot of attention for that sport, though, that's for sure.
Okay. All right, Jeff, I'm going to ask you a question about a day in history. 23 years ago yesterday, do you know what took place?
Wait, 23?
23 years ago Wednesday.
Well, like I said, I already said it was the 25 years ago this week was the Tyson upset. 23 years ago, I'm not sure. What was that?
23 years ago Wednesday, general manager Ron Wolf resurrected a dormant Green Bay Packers organization and put himself on a track for the 2015 Hall of Fame induction in one masterful stroke by swinging a trade with the Atlanta Falcons for Brett Favre. As assistant to general manager Dick Steinberg, Wolf rated Favre as the number one player in the 1991 NFL draft and feverishly attempted to trade up for a chance at the Southern Mississippi Star. He was absolutely infatuated with Brett Favre when he took over general manager job in 1991. He thought to get the Brett Favre away from the Atlanta Falcons, quite naturally, he was a backup. And when he came to Green Bay, Don Majkowski was the starting quarterback, and the only way that Favre got his first start was because Majkowski, if I'm not mistaken, got a season-ending knee injury, if I'm not mistaken. And
that's right.
The rest
was,
of
Majkowski was quarterback before Favre. Yeah.
Yes, and they say that the proverbial rest is history. And supposedly, Brett Favre is going to get inducted, going to get honored finally sometime this season in Green Bay as being the icon quarterback that saved the franchise or resurrected the franchise when Ron Wolf pulled that off. And Ron Wolf, quite naturally, like I said, is going into the 2015 Hall of Fame class. In August. And I just wanted to get that one out there because of the fact is that it was 23 years ago yesterday, and I happen to be a fairly big Brett Favre fan. And I just wanted to put that out there about Brett Favre. But I want to talk about a couple of players that one approaching 30 and one over 30 that has a strong possibility of not being with their respective teams come 2015. One Reggie Bush roster spot may not be secure. He's going to turn 30 in March, and his average yards per carry has dropped, and it was at a five-year low, which is 3.91. And quite naturally, Reggie Bush, he came into the league, has always been plagued with injuries. There's a strong shot that Joik Bell and Theo Riddick are going to be the 1-2 backs in the backfield for the Detroit Lions. And one Mr. Reggie Bush is going to be the odd man out. Same thing, I'm talking about the guy who's over 31, Steven Jackson. Quite naturally, they have a new regime in there. Dan Quinn took over, the former defensive coordinator from the Seattle Seahawks, is the new coach for the head coach for the Atlanta Falcons, and he probably going to want to put his stamp on this team, and that won't include an old running back Steven Jackson. They have Jaquez Rogers there, and they also have Devonta Freeman, and more than likely, I think it's Kyle Shanahan, who's the offensive coordinator, only has the undersized, like I said, Devonta Freeman as their featured back option right now. So more than likely, with this class that's coming up in 2015, I'm talking about the NFL draft class, which is supposedly having a nice selection of running backs along with wide receivers in this class. Probably going to be looking to get a young stud running back to team up with Devonta Freeman. And Le'Veon Bell is going to get a 2-game suspension, looks like, for the first 2 games of next season. So those who will draft him won't probably be able to use them for the first 2 weeks of the next year. I should say the 2015 season. And Adrian Peterson, the CEO of the Vikings, stated that they would welcome back Adrian Peterson with open arms once he's reinstated. We'll wait and see what happens there. You know, and this is going to be pretty interesting about another team that's in the NFC North. The Green Bay Packers, who has long the head coach, has always been the offensive play caller. He's giving up those duties. He's going to be just the head coach and oversee all phases of the game, including the offense. He's turning it over to his He turned over offensive coordinator duties to Tom Clements. Now, I don't know what your thoughts on this, but Jason Garrett and Mike Tomlin have progressed into just being a head coach and not a play caller on either side of the ball. What's your thoughts on Mike McCarthy? And this is pretty big because ever since he's been there, he's been calling the plays, and now he's not going to be doing that. He's turning it over to someone else. What's your thoughts on Tom Clements being the play caller versus Mike McCarthy just being the head coach and overseeing all three phases of the game? Talk to me, Jeff.
It seems like a natural progression. McCarthy seems like an excellent coach. He doesn't get a lot of publicity. I don't think he seeks it. And bringing up the topic of Ron Wolf, you know, he did help turn around the Packers, and, you know, the Packers stunk for most of the 70s and 80s, but for the 90s and the 2000s, they look like, and this is not an insult anyway, a well-run business.
Right.
And I used that metaphor because they are the only major league professional sports franchise in the United States that's publicly held.
Yep.
And, you know, when they stunk in the 70s and the 80s, people tried to speculate. There wasn't a lot of fact, and they were trying to figure out how come they were so bad. And they thought one of the reasons was they didn't have a singular ownership, you know, they were publicly held, and that they didn't have strong leadership, et cetera, et cetera. But you know what? They hired the right people to be executives and to coach, and they won for most of the Brett Favre era, and they keep on trucking. And there was just so much speculation. And then when you win, it doesn't matter, you know.
Right.
People thought it was the location, hurt them. Doesn't seem nobody complains about it now. Winning changes a lot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And a winning quarterback changes a lot. And that's one reason why they released Josh McCown, for one. And he's looking for a home. I've always said, you've heard me say it more than once, that I didn't think Josh McCown was a starting quarterback. He's a career backup. For some reason, Lovie Smith fell in love with him. Thought he could work the magic that he did when he took over for Jay Cutler in Chicago. It never worked. They went back and forth, switching between Mike Glennon and Josh McCown. Now Josh McCown is out, and supposedly Lovie Smith is in love with Jameis Winston over Mariota. So we'll have to wait and see when the combine starts, which is a week from tomorrow. It starts the 20th, if I'm not mistaken. No, I think it starts the 8th. No, it starts the 20th, right. It starts the 20th, which is a week from tomorrow. And we'll have to wait and see what happens from the combine until the draft, which starts on April 30th, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I think it's April 30th. So we'll have to wait and see in Chicago. All right, Jeff, we come to the end of the show. It is definitely a very good show. A lot of things we covered. Thanks for joining me. You got something to say in closing before I close the show out?
Wow. This has been a very interesting show. Just a lot of news, mostly off the field or off the court or whatever.
Right.
I tell you, it's going to be very interesting in the New York area on the sports radio with A-Rod returning to the Yankees. And that's going to be a three-ring circus. And now's when I start paying more attention to the NBA. And this is also when I missed the USFL after NFL is over. Sacramento signed George Karl to coach the team. And I don't know. He might help revive that team. He's had a lot of success in the NBA. And the All-Star game is coming up this weekend. And I'll tell you, because of all this other news, you know, that we need to talk about the Little League World Series scandal. The New York area was talking about the Knicks owner sending a nasty email to a fan. And it's not a huge deal, but James Dolan is just showing his lack of class.
Yep.
Believe me, that comes as no news to me, because he got his money the old-fashioned way. He inherited it. And everybody's been all over Chris Paul for criticizing. Seems so long ago, because it's been an eventful week, because Chris Paul criticized a referee who happened to be a woman. He used the appropriate pronoun. What was he supposed to say? Because
right.
I once got in trouble for something like that. There was a gentleman who worked as a nurse, and I had an issue with him, and I used the proper pronoun, and somebody thought I had a problem with the fact that a man was a nurse. And I said, no, I don't have a problem with that. But what am I supposed to do? Not use the proper pronoun? I think it was a big deal about nothing.
Right. I understand what you mean, Jeff. All right. Thanks for joining me tonight. It was definitely a pleasure. We had some good conversation. Tune in, people, on Saturday, where Vic will be back. Like he wasn't with you guys on Sunday. Excuse me, Saturday. I was 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Vic and I will be talking. We talk on the FSP show on Saturday afternoon. On 10 o'clock in the morning on Sunday will be the master plan. And we'll be talking sports, probably talking about the NFL. There's some other things that I wanted to talk about that we didn't cover on the show. We'll bounce it around on Sunday. And then we'll be back here again on Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Jeff and I will be holding it down. Maybe Mike Wright will jump in here and give his two cents on what he has to say about what's been going on in the world of sports, regardless of what sport it is. With all that being said, tune in next week, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Thursday night, and we're out of here. See ya.
Yeah. It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah. Check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics crew. Yeah.